Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you all for coming this evening. It's nice to see so many people. Some of you may know that last Thursday, first I saw Hannah in the morning in front of CVS, and she asked me. We talked a little bit, and she said, "Oh, can you give me a ride?" And I said, "No, I could, but come to my house first because I really have to go to the bathroom. I'm not feeling so good." And I ended up with a kidney stone. About a half hour after that, although I didn't know at the time that's what it was. And needless to say, it was very, very painful. And a procedure was done, and it was not successful. So I still have my kidney stones. I think I have three of them, two in the kidney and one in the urethra. Any rate, I didn't mean to go into such detail, but it's been on my mind all week. And so I've been home all week. And I'm feeling better this evening, although not perfect. And tomorrow morning at 6:30, I have to be at the hospital for another procedure. So please bear with me. I have to cut the talk short. And hopefully I'll be able to express everything that I've been intending to. As some of you may know, my practice started 40 years ago in this very place, actually, my formal practice. And so in doing this way-seeking mind talk, or trying to prepare for it, I've had to go back a long, long time to ponder what brought me to this practice. And in reading some things that Colbin said, I realized, and I had been thinking of this myself also, that it goes even further back than that, to my parents, to ancestors, who knows how far back. And I think that's true for all of us. We're never quite sure how we come to this place, but I don't think it's an accident that each of us has found this practice. 40 years ago was when I moved to Santa Cruz, but it was actually when I was living in New York City that I feel that the seeds were planted. And about the 10 years previous to that, I was working for the New York Times, and it was a very interesting job in the newsroom. But I knew in my heart that I wasn't going to be a journalist, and I wanted to do something meaningful with my life. And I feel that was a real turning point for me. Before that, you know, everything just seemed kind of, like just having fun. But there was something that made me feel I need to do something to help other people. And somehow I found volunteer work at the New York Foundling Hospital. I'm not sure how I got there. It was run by the Sisters of Charity. And I would go there on Saturday afternoons or Saturday morning, maybe all, I think I would be there almost all day. And then on Sunday, I would take out one of the children for the day. At that time, I had a boyfriend who had a little boy, and so, you know, we'd have a kind of a family day together. And I just want to tell you one story from that time, because I think it may have been, because I remember it, it must have been a very powerful experience, and I think I've told this story to a couple of people here. The little girl that I was taking out for about a year, Carla, she was about a year, year and a half, and she was standing up in her crib, and she threw up. And as soon as she threw up, she got this big smile on her face. Obviously, she felt better. But the reaction of one of the caregivers was to get annoyed with her. And as soon as that person got annoyed, her head went down, and the smile disappeared from her face. And it was very, very moving for me. But it was through this experience of working with the children that I felt I wanted to do that kind of work as my life's work. And I ended up eventually going to graduate school and majoring in early childhood education. During that time at graduate school, I was given the opportunity to become involved in art, painting. While the other students were doing more craft projects, I decided that I wanted it to be more free form. And so art, that was the beginning of my painting, interest in painting, which I've continued to this day. This was the 60s, and it was a very exciting time, especially in New York City. And I feel that there was, and I think back, there were just so many people who influenced me and that I got to work with. You know, it's hardly my story. It's the story of the times. And so many things were just beginning to take root. And I think I was very fortunate to be in the right place at the right time to take advantage of so many things. And one afternoon I was in my neighbor's apartment and his friend came to visit. He was an artist, and he said, "Oh, there's an Aikido demonstration downtown. Do you want to go? This 10th degree black belt from Japan is going to be giving a demonstration." And I said, "Sure." And I went down, and it was this, I don't know if any of you have done Aikido. His name was Tohei. He was very famous at that time. And it was just delightful. He was a delightful person, and I was really enthralled with what I was seeing. And so I enrolled in the classes. And at this time, I was teaching, and I would go down to the dojo to practice every day after work. And I would barely make it there. I was so tired after teaching all day, and I practically fall asleep on the train. But doing that practice was such a life-giving experience. It just totally woke me up and really transformed my being. It was so energizing. And in addition to that, I remember feeling that Aikido, by the way, I is harmony and ki is energy or spirit and do is the way. the opportunity to work so, in a way, so intimately with another person, where there's so much trust. One person does the attacking, and then the other person does the defending, and it's a very circular kind of movement, and you learn how to fall, and the person who is and each person is helping the other person with the technique. And so that was the first time I had experienced that kind of thing with another person that was not personal, because it didn't matter whether these people were my friends or not, although some of them became friends. But it was just having this opportunity to work intimately with someone in who I didn't even know sometimes, in such a trusting way. And I feel that, you know, our practice here is in a way similar to that, where we, there are people that come here who we may not know or just know from seeing here, and yet we're doing something very intimate together. And it's, you almost can't explain it, but it's a very deep, deep kind of thing that's happening. Well, then one of my Aikido teachers who taught on the weekend came up to me after class and said, "I think you would like Tai Chi." And I went to the Tai Chi studio, and Professor Cheng Man Ching was doing a sword class, and you know, that was really wonderful to watch. Everyone looked so happy, and I thought, sure, I'll do it. And so I enrolled in the class and learned the Tai Chi form. And it took 9 months to learn it, and soon after that, I started a relationship with someone that took me to Philadelphia. Well, the relationship turned out to be really awful. But Maggie Newman, who is one of Professor Cheng's main students, he had six of them, taught in Philadelphia twice a week. She would come from New York. And Lou, my first teacher, said that I would be in good hands with Maggie. And he was really right. I guess I had to go through that awful relationship so I could be in Philadelphia to study with Maggie. And she was the kind of person who, she was so positive and so life-giving and instilled such a good feeling in everyone. And I was just totally taken with her and with the other students in the class. We had wonderful practice together. Again, like in Aikido, like here. Everyone was very devoted to the practice of Tai Chi. And then one day after class, I think she may have been doing a beginning class, but the advanced students, she said she was going to show us how to sit. I don't know if she called it Zazen, but she showed us the half lotus position. And she had been a student of, or she was a student at that time of Eido Roshi, which I didn't know, I found out later. And so I sat, and I'm not so sure, you know, I don't know. And, but I tried it, and I, you know, would do it after class with the others. And then I started sitting at home. And I remember one night I was in front of a window. It was dark, and maybe I had the lights out, but at any rate, I obviously was looking out the window as I was sitting, and there was a shooting star, which I felt go right to my heart. And somehow at that moment, just the physical sensation of sitting just said yes to me. It just really registered. And I think a lot of my practice has been that. It hasn't been so, I haven't done that much reading, you know, some, of course, enough for me, but, you know, certainly I'm not a, if I read too much, my mind starts going around in circles and I have to put the book down. And I tend to like the simpler texts. But sitting itself has always been my greatest teacher. And in terms of way-seeking mind, I feel like every time I come to the cushion, I come with my way-seeking mind. And this is a very difficult practice. I think one of the hardest things is accepting, really accepting oneself. You know, we can say to ourselves, oh yeah, that was good, that what I did, or yeah, that turned out pretty good, but that really deep, deep, deep sense of acceptance is very difficult. And I think when we come to the cushion and we sit, that's where we're going. And it doesn't need any words. It just is, that's just it. And kind of parenthetically, during the time when I was practicing Aikido, I was hanging around with a bunch of jazz musicians, and there was a couple of jazz musicians that were visiting. One of my friends from Japan, and we had a barbecue at his house, and these two people said, well, if you ever want to come to Japan, let us know, and you know, we'll take you around. And so I did go to Japan before I left for Philadelphia and stayed there for 5 weeks. And so this was before I knew about Zen practice. And mostly I traveled around going to jazz clubs, but I came across this picture of me at a temple, and I was like this with a big smile on my face. I don't know if it was very prophetic or pathetic, maybe. Yeah, I tended to like all things Japanese. So after I was studying with Maggie for probably about a year and a half to 2 years in Philadelphia, a couple of friends of mine who I knew from New York, two teachers, moved to Santa Cruz, and they said, come on out here, it's really nice. And I was very torn because I didn't want to leave my Tai Chi practice, but at that same time, Ben Lowe, who was the senior student of Professor Chang in China, in Taiwan, moved to San Francisco. So I knew that I could continue my practice, my Tai Chi practice, and could come all and come to Santa Cruz. So I did that, and within about a month of arriving here, I asked around, does anybody know where Zendo is or where I could practice? I don't remember the words I used, but somebody gave me the address, 113 School Street, and I remember ending up in front of the house, and one of the monks, although I don't think he was in his robes then, was sitting out in front, and he gave me Zazen instruction, and I just plunged into the practice and soon after moved into the house next door. And I think I've told that story during my last talk, so I don't want to go into that at this point. I didn't say anything very much about my background, except that I'm from New York. My grandparents are all from Eastern Europe, and they came over to Ellis Island and under very difficult circumstances, but managed to establish themselves and set up pretty decent lives, nothing spectacular. And they were all Jewish, and my parents were not practicing Jews. It was more cultural. And I was pretty happy as a kid, but I'm sure I wasn't happy all the time. I was reading some notes from when I was in Japan, and I was keeping a diary for a very short time, and I had forgotten how miserable I was at a certain point. It's so interesting how we block out. I don't think we could go on if we kept all that pain that we've experienced in our lives, you know, with us all the time. And, you know, there was a lot of pain in growing up. I think mainly for me it was seeing the pain and suffering of my parents, and now as a much older person, I appreciate the way in which they had their own way of giving meaning to their lives and to try to overcome the difficulties that they had. Unfortunately, especially my mother, didn't have a practice that would help her a whole lot, but mostly she turned to books, read a lot, and my dad really loved music and classical music. And when he was about my age, maybe a little younger, he started practicing yoga and was reading Krishnamurti, and he had gotten over a very difficult period in his life and was trying to understand some spiritual teachings. So, you know, without having a practice, he did his best to appreciate his life. I think when we sit, I feel we're sitting with our whole lives, everything. I know if it happens to anyone else here, but sometimes I get overwhelmed with something, and you know, it just takes over my whole being, something from the past, and settles down again. I think, I'm sure there's other things I could say, but I can't think of anything else right now. But I do want to take this opportunity to thank Kathy for bringing me home from the hospital and visiting me there. And Hannah, thank you for bringing me things and coming to visit. And to Edie and Dana for being there if I needed any more help. I really appreciated it. I live alone, and so I was sorely reminded of the difficulty of that, especially as one gets older. I have a son, should mention him, he's almost 29 years old, and he lives in New York, and he's very loving and caring, and is always there for me, but he can't bring me chicken soup. Okay, I can take a couple of comments, or if anybody has anything they'd like to say. Rosie?
I'd like to hear any little bit that you feel like saying about your relationship with Colvin.
Oh. It's a very deep relationship, yeah. I thought about, I sat with Colvin for, I guess it was a little less than 30 years, but on and off. And most of it was doing sesshins with him and being here on Tuesday nights with him, sometimes going to his house. He taught a little workshop to my son and two of his friends on Kudo, which is archery, and calligraphy one afternoon, which was very, very sweet of him. And I did a calligraphy workshop with him once. And I visited his temple in Japan and got to know his family. Yeah, he's always here. Thank you. Patrick?
Many years ago, what finally in the last couple of years got you in that path again?
Oh, well, the first time I thought about it, I met my son's father, and so that just disappeared. That was 30 years ago. And so for many years my practice was bringing up my son, and so just getting to a sesshin was difficult. So my practice was kind of, well, Sally knows. You come and go and you do what you can. And I think after my son graduated from college and was, kind of establishing his own life, and then I retired, and I'm thinking, well, I'm pretty healthy, and so what? I wanted to devote myself more to practice, because I was sitting a lot. It was kind of just making maybe a public commitment to it, as well as a personal one. And yeah, it kind of happened gradually. Thank you. Thank you.
Any stories come to mind about your practice with Maizu Miroshi?
When I was studying with Mayazumi Roshi, most of the time I was practicing with Joko. But of course, he gave many of the talks. And there's something that I always hear over and over again that he would say. He had this way of speaking where he would, it would be, you know, that kind of really, kind of thing. And then he would speak very gently. It would go from one thing to another, one extreme to the other. And he would often say, you really have to appreciate your life. And I've been listening to some tapes that he talks about Uji. And he was saying that Uji, it's just, it's your life. That's what it is. And he's very grounded, as much as Koban was in the clouds, so to speak. Miyazumi Roshi was, you know, really, really solid. And so I think the practice with him was very dynamic. And I remember, actually, the first, one interesting story is the first time I went to ZCLA, and the first time I met him, I was invited by Steve Bodian, because Steve was living there. And I was kind of walking around, I think I was in front of the Sangha house, and they have there was a koi pond, very small one, and there was this man in a white t-shirt, kind of a thin man, and he was cleaning the koi pond. And I thought, oh, you know, that's very nice. And he came over to me and he said, oh, you must be Ellen, and he shook my hand, very sweet. And then I found out later that that was Miyazumi Roshi. So, yeah. It was a nice way for a first meeting.
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end.